Hey, podcast listener. Are you working so hard you wonder if the money is even worth it? If you're like most CPAs I work with, you have way too much to do, you feel relentless deadline pressure, and worst of all, you feel torn between serving clients and being with family. What if I told you you could work a 40-hour week without losing a dime? I know it sounds impossible, but my Down to 40 Hours CPA Mastermind is designed for CPAs just like you who want to get their lives back. Down to 40 Hours CPA Mastermind is launching soon. In it, you'll learn how to start getting your time back week by week, make your workload manageable while still bringing in plenty of revenue, what to put in your packages and how to price them, and so much more. Don't leave your future to chance. CPA Mastermind will get you on the sane, profitable path you've been searching for. With unlimited coaching, your success is guaranteed. Go to GeraldineCarter.com to learn more. Dates, times, pricing, it's all there.
The people that you can reliably hit a double for, or and sometimes a home run and sometimes a grand slam, it's so much easier to find those people because they group together already. They're already birds of a feather.
Welcome to the Business Strategy for CPAs podcast, where I help overworked CPAs go down to 40 hours and then down to 25 hours without losing revenue. My name is Geraldine Carter. Today, I have a special episode for you in that the format is a little different. I'm here with Jonathan Stark, who you may know as the host of the Ditching Hourly podcast and the Business of Authority podcast, which he co-hosts with Rochelle Moulton. Jonathan has been on my podcast at least three times before as a guest, but this episode is more exploration and conversation than interview, and he's cross-posting this conversation to his podcast, Ditching Hourly. Jonathan, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Today, we're talking about the fear of niche boredom, and we're talking about this because it's one of the reasons business owners, accountants included, will cite as a valid justification for not niching down. And presumably, of course, you hear it on your side too, which is why we're talking. And despite countless reasons that niching can help your business, we hear lots of people say, "But I will be bored," and proceed to miss out on the benefits of niching. And if you believe this thought, dear listener, number one, it's not true. We don't think it's true. And number two, you're missing out. And if we're being honest, we want to attempt to enlighten you to see what may be in your self-interest so that you may choose to reap the rewards that are available to you. Should we dive in?
Let's start like this. Let's say I agree that it's boring. Ooh. What is the thing that would be boring?
So it's the repetitiveness and I think not being challenged, right? Because anytime you're insufficiently challenged, it just gets uninteresting and boring.
I think this depends on what you see your expertise as. If it's, let's say it's the repetition thing that, oh, I'll get bored doing the same thing every day. Because that's usually what I hear when I'm talking to anybody about specializing, even specializing in a particular skill set or niching down on a particular target market or kind of buyer. The boredom thing is like, there won't be enough variety for me, which I take to mean that they think it's going to be very repetitive.
Yes.
I'm going to go full devil's advocate. Like, what if your job is not where you get the spice of life? I'm arguing against myself, but let's just say your job is not where you get the spice of life. It's very repetitive, but because it's very repetitive, you can automate, systematize, outsource, and delegate all of the boring stuff, and then go have a fun life 25 weeks a year or something like that. So let's just say that the person who fears that it will be very repetitive and there won't be enough variety is correct. You still get variety back because you can pretty much automate your job, and then you don't have to worry about this repetitive toil. You could start a new business on the side to entertain yourself.
Right? So you're advocating for the side of let it not have variety. Let it just be the same thing again and again and again so that it can be automated, so that it can be systematized, et cetera, and go get your jollies elsewhere.
I'm not advocating for that, but I'm saying worst case scenario. Let's say, dear listener, that you're right.
Yeah.
I don't think you are, but let's say you are right. It's still not going to be boring.
So I would almost argue that to a degree, that person almost is right, right? And that is what you want. You want to reduce the amount of unnecessary variety so that you can simplify your business, so you can focus elsewhere.
Right. So I just wanted to kind of start there because it's the most kind of cynical view of it is that, yes, you're right, you will get bored. But even if that were true, so worst case scenario, even if that were true, you just get variety elsewhere because the repetitiveness of the job, assuming you're not trading time for money, repetitiveness of your job makes it just easy to automate and systematize and all those things. So the amount of repetitive stuff that you have to do collapses. So you're not doing this machine-like behavior all the time. But we don't believe that that's actually what happens. So what actually happens is you're, in my opinion, just high level, your job gets way more exciting because you start to realize that what you do is not the collection of activities that you perform all week. It is the transformation that you provide to your clients. So if you think, like, if somebody said, what do you do? Hey, nice to meet you. What do you do? If you say, oh, I do taxes or I do software development or whatever. I do these activities. I do this collection of activities. That's one way to look at it. And in theory, that's the piece that could get repetitive. It doesn't, but it could. Or you could think of yourself as, I help small business owners reach financial freedom. And you're not the collection of activities that you perform every week. You are the outcome that you provide to your clients. So if you change your framing to be that what you do is help clients, then immediately it becomes really exciting to practice.
So what I'm hearing you say is that I'm hearing two versions of variety, right? Because you have the variety in the tasks, and yes, the tasks themselves may be repetitive, and that's fine. And to a degree, that is what you want. So there may not be variety in the tasks, but there becomes plenty of variety in how you deliver the outcome. And the focus for people who are convinced that they are concerned they might be bored tends to be on the variety of tasks. Whereas what we're talking about is now suddenly you have so much more variety in terms of how you deliver outcomes. And that is way more interesting and never gets boring.
Right. Yeah. So the repetitive stuff becomes table stakes. It becomes background noise. It's nothing. The new thing that you would find when you focus down on a particular type of problem / person, you know, target market, particular kind of expensive problem, as I would call it, you find that you don't really know that much about it. And there's a massive amount to learn there. And you just never noticed it before because you were skimming across the surface of all these different kinds of shallow problems, as if this sort of sugar high of novelty gave you some sort of expertise. It doesn't. Like, if you're in a service business, you have clients. Your job is to make their lives better. That's your whole job. And if you're not doing that reliably, repeatably, and with increasing success, you're not an expert. Like, compared to your peers, you might be great at the activities of your craft, but if the goal is to transform your clients as compared to their competitors, and you're not doing it, then you're not actually that good at what you do, air quotes. This all has to do with framing of what is it that you do.
Yes. Do you do the series of repetitive tasks or do you transform your clients?
Yeah. And once you recognize that you're in business to transform your clients, if you're in a service business, that is what you're in business to do, to make their lives better. It never gets repetitive because there's always going to be novelty in the details of the client's situation. Like, you can't just ignore the details of the client's situation. So even if Alice, Bob, and Carol are all your clients and they're all whatever, solopreneurs who run online education businesses, I guarantee you every single one of them is going to have different things that will present different obstacles for you to help them with the transformation. There's always going to be novelty. The question is, what kind of novelty do you want? Do you want a sugar high or do you want to go deep?
So for listeners, I think of this example of, if I look across my clients who all go in the direction of niching, and it's a journey. Once you're on it, you're kind of always on it. And the person who went the farthest is a client who I worked with in the farming space and niched down, got rid of, you know, cattle, because once you own cows, you're a rancher, no walnut and pecan trees, and just went into row crop farmers, 7,500 acres, right? So not 250 acres, not people with a plot in the backyard, But 7,500 acres where it's a legit operation with lots of machinery and combines and irrigation tanks, fertilizer tanks, like the pivots, all of it, right? And even having her clients be more or less 7,500 acre row crop farmers, so corn, soy, wheat, and rice, she still had a ton of variation in those clients because those clients had different, you know, they're planting different things a certain season. One was banking on corn, another one was banking on soy. They had different sizes of farms, even though she targeted 7,500. One was at 6,500, one was at 9,500, one was acquiring a giant piece of land. There's all kinds of stuff going on inside their businesses that is, I don't want to say novel, but different. And that's, there's a ton of variety inside the lives of your clients when you're working with them in the businesses of your clients. And trading generalism, which is where a lot of my, which is where a lot of accountants are, trading it for specificity enables you to have the variety and see the variety, recognize the variety inside your individual clients and provide so much more value to them so much easier because of your continued deepening expertise. It's hard to argue against you when we're on the same side of this.
The thing that people don't see before they try it is that there's a whole universe inside of the lives of your clients or inside of the businesses of your clients. There's a whole universe of really interesting things. You don't need to switch from like a plastics manufacturer to an animal shelter to, you know, to a Fortune 50 bank to be like, oh, this is interesting. This is keeping me interested in my job. I'm learning new things because I've got these different problems to solve. It's shallow. If you never scratch the surface, if you never get past that surface level of in my world, everybody says, oh, I'm smart. I can get up to speed on their business fast. It's like, okay, let's say that's true. I actually don't believe it's true. You can't get up to speed fast with like a, it's, that's just actually super arrogant to think that you can get up to speed on a $10 million business that you've never encountered before, like quickly enough for you to build them a software system, whatever. Let's say you could get up to speed. And then the next client that comes along is completely in a completely different industry. And you throw away all that learning just because you were to entertain yourself. To me, it's almost, it's not quite malpractice, but it's like, why would you do that? It's just so wasteful to throw away all of that stuff that you just learned. And granted, you might, you know, if you have like a whole bunch of different kinds of clients, just extremely heterogeneous, some of them might have been less fun to work with than others. And you might fear that you'll pick the wrong one to niche down on. And that's a separate fear. But once you find one that you like and you excel at helping, not at doing your activities of your craft, but excel at helping them get the business outcomes that they came to you for in the first place, that gives you a feeling that you do not want to not get in the future. You become addicted to that feeling of like, whoa, like these people literally, I had a client once say to me after I delivered this software thing to them, this software solution, like, we are going to build a statue of you outside of the building, right? Like that, however many late nights I had up, you know, creating portals and FileMaker and writing scripts and that stuff, like whatever, like that's not where the excitement is. It's like saying, like LeBron James practicing free throws in the off season, from one frame, you could say that's probably boring. From the other frame, when he wins a game at the buzzer, it's not boring. So like, what are you here to do?
So you just touched on a bunch of things. The superficial one, I liken to, we have a globe on our kitchen counter. We have little kids, we spin it, we talk about the countries. And if you look at London on our globe, it's just a tiny little dot.
I love this already. Yeah.
You could easily conclude that London is just a dot and how boring and why would I want to go to a dot? And you would be right. On the globe, it's nothing but a dot. Yeah. But you miss going to London. It's obviously not a dot, but you don't know that until you get there. And when you get there, you're like, oh my goodness gracious, I had no idea all of this was here. And you discover the richness.
Yeah.
And for people who just want to spin the globe of niches and keep themselves interested and always get up to speed, they miss the opportunity to go deep and really understand something deeply. Where that took you was fulfillment. And what I see as the tragedy of not niching is missing out
on the gratification and the deep sense of fulfillment and contribution that you receive when you work with a client and make a meaningful impact in their business and in their life. And they say things like, we're going to put a statue of you outside, or I get emails on the regular now that say things like, and I pulled this one up just so I could get it verbatim. My client count is steady. My revenue is up 25%, and I'm on my way to making enough money to allow me to go down to 4 days a week at my other job. Hashtag life goal. Thanks again for everything. I'm so glad I found you. And those kinds of messages just do not get old. It's so deeply fulfilling to be on the receiving end of that. I feel a sense of, I don't know, remorse or something. Like, I want to grab people who cite boredom as the reason, as a reason for not niching, and be like, no, 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 no. You have no idea how amazing it feels to receive this kind of thank you from a client. And I can guarantee you're not getting it when you're bebopping all around every possible industry.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. It's so true. It leads to, this is not what we're really talking about today, because like the fear of boredom is like one thing, but on the other side of that is this fulfillment. And beyond that is glowing testimonials and powerful referrals. And beyond that is raising your prices and increasing your profits and you also working less. It's like a direct line. Because people don't need, if you view yourself just as someone who does tax or writes code, you're a commodity. So you don't have any real leverage in terms of pricing. Maybe that's not a problem with CPAs so much, but with software developers, it definitely is. But if you are known for improving businesses, not for building websites or filing taxes, but if you're known for making your clients' lives better, that word's going to get around. So if you had a, let's say there's enough surface area of shiny objects on the globe for you to actually entertain yourself or not get bored. It's a big surface area. There's a lot there. And it's probably true that you could do that, that you could entertain yourself by just skipping along the surface of the ocean. But if you decide to go deep, you'll find that it's the same amount of surface area. It's just a different direction. Like the cave opens up to this giant, you know, the rabbit hole opens into this giant landscape. It's just going toward the center instead of skimming around the surface, if we use the earth metaphor. And if you step back and you're like, why did I start this business in the first place? It wasn't to entertain yourself. I guarantee no one listening to this started a business to entertain themselves. And then you did it probably initially because you left some job that you didn't like and you wanted to be your own boss and have financial freedom and those sorts of things. Pretty quickly, it's like, oh, I actually have to help these clients, because if I don't help them, they're mad at me. And when they send me mean emails and they don't want to pay my invoices. So you're like, oh, okay, I need to start satisfying my clients or delighting my clients. And you learn this lesson pretty quickly when on at least on my side of the world with the software developers, they think they're God's gift to React development working in-house somewhere. And they go solo and find out that running a business has a lot of other moving parts. And eventually they get clients and they need to satisfy these clients. If you are in a service business and you're not reliably satisfying clients, or better, delighting clients, you probably don't have that strong of a business. So you could look at this as self-preservation, never mind growth, but just self-preservation, to have like a strong, durable business with like a steady pipeline of the kinds of clients you want to work with. What would be the best way to do it? It would be to delight them every single time. And what's the best way to do that? To focus on a particular kind of client so you can increase the odds of delighting them every single time. And I know we're supposed to be talking about boredom, but I'm trying to draw out like the phases of it and say, like, this is in your self-interest, by the way. It's not just like, oh, we should do this because Geraldine and Jonathan said so. I mean, you could do this for selfish reasons and it would still benefit you and the clients.
So the way I talk about this concept is, for my clients who are CPAs and accountants, they tend to think that money or revenue comes from performing work over time for clients. They send the bill or the invoice to their client, the client sends them money, and so it looks like revenue comes from clients. But Thinking that is like thinking that time comes from your watch. Revenue comes from creating value for clients. And once you recognize that revenue comes from creating value for clients, then suddenly you go, oh, okay, how do I create more value for clients? It's a really different question than how do I do more work for clients?
Right. Yes. Because if you're not creating value for them, if you're not satisfying and delighting them, they're going to stop hiring you. It's not the work. Like, you could keep doing the work and they'll stop paying the invoices. It's not coming from the work.
It's not coming from the work. Because if you could do the right work and they're happy and they pay you, but if you do the wrong work, then they're going to be pissed and they're not going to want to pay you. And then you fight over invoices.
Right.
So it's not the work itself. If you know that the work that you're doing for your clients is the work that they want because they've been able to connect the dots to the value it creates for them, then great, sort of. But making the leap to thinking about asking clients, what is it that they really want? They're not going to answer this question directly in terms of the transformation that they're seeking, but you can infer it by asking the right questions. Then you set about creating value for clients, and then you have a lot more options for how you deliver that. At any rate, you create value for clients. The more value you create, the higher your prices can go. The more you standardize your processes, the more efficient you get, your margins go up, your prices go up and your margins go up and your time to deliver goes down. Hooray, you work less while making more.
And that's not boring either.
And that's not boring either. Right. Do not get bored when you have extra discretionary time.
Yeah, you know what's not boring? Getting rich.
Yeah, and like having time to just relax instead of being go, go, go all the time, which our culture really supports. So one of the questions that's been running through my head in terms of the listener and trying to, you know, help, you and I both have a genuine interest in helping them see the value of niching, but some people can't be sold. And I was thinking earlier this morning about, so I have a history of travel, and one time I called my dad from La Paz and I was like, and it was amazing, right? It's like at 14,000 feet and the mountains are, you know, another 10,000 feet on top of that. And the culture and the colors, it's all just incredible. And I called my dad and I was like, Dad, La Paz is amazing. You have to come here. And I sold him super hard. And he was like, yeah, no, I'm not convinced. And then, you know, fast forward a couple of years and I went to Antarctica and I got back and it was sort of pre-internet. And so I sent my mom Lonely Planet Antarctica and I was like, with all my red pen colored highlights, I was like, mom, you have to go. It's amazing. And a couple of weeks later, she sends me a text and it's, you know, IJKL text. And she's like, I bought my trip to Antarctica.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so some people are going to be sold and some people will just not be sold no matter how hard you sell them on the idea, right? And no matter how amazing it is.
Sure.
So the question in my mind is like, are we trying to convince the unconvincible, so to speak, or the ones who are ready to be convinced and just sort of need the guidebook?
It's a little bit like, come on in, the water's warm. You know, you don't believe it until you believe it, you know, until you're in the water. You don't believe it until it's too late. So it's true that there's a certain leap of faith here. And I think there are two ways that I typically tackle that question that you just asked. One is, what are the symptoms that are bad? Like, what are the pains that unniched people are experiencing? And connecting the dots between the fact that they're a generalist and these pains that they absolutely are up nights worrying about. If you can connect the dots between those two things, then it increases the likelihood that the switching cost will be lower than the not switching cost. That's probably a good place to start. So like, what are some symptoms that your people are experiencing, like consciously wrestling with when they're just sort of focused on their craft and less focused on specializing in a particular target market? Like your farmer person, what was the situation with your farmer specialist?
So before niching and specializing, they are almost universally overworked. They're working 45, 55, 60 hours a week. They are endlessly chasing clients for documents in the way that you try and chase a herd of cats and they all scatter. And you just like, they're gone, they're under the bed.
I'm one of those cats.
You've got deadlines to meet and you need those documents from clients and you want to do a good job and they feel guilty about not being able to do a good job and they're hindered by their own clients who don't get them the necessary documentation in time until it's crunch time, 5, you know, 8, 5 days before the deadline, April 10th, and all of a sudden all your clients show up and they're like, oh, here, I thought you might want this. Or they show up with a W-2 in their folded in their back pocket with like $500,000 of W-2 income. And the CPA is like, oh my God, like you're dropping this on me 5 days before the deadline. Okay. Or they're on the receiving end of frustration from their clients for not having turned around work in what the client thought was a reasonable amount of time, whatever that client's expectation was, whether it was spoken or unspoken. They are stressed out, always backed up against the deadlines, and often in this place of like, wait, 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 twiddle thumbs, twiddle thumbs, twiddle thumbs. Okay, now slam on the gas. And the last one is feeling underpaid for the value they create for their clients.
Okay. So now connect the, okay, so all those pains, I'm sure anybody that's experiencing any of those is like, oh, yes, I hate all of that. So how does niching down change any of that? It might not be obvious.
In our case, the first thing that we do, because they tend to be beyond capacity because of the historical tendency of hourly billing, is disengage a bunch of clients so that we can make space, so that we can begin to think about the value that is created in the service offering. Because where my clients tend to get stuck is that they're selling the service, but they're actually creating a transformation or multiple transformations at the very same time as they're delivering and selling the service. So we help them shift out of selling the service and focus on selling the transformation. But if you have clients all across the board, manufacturing, e-commerce, retail, real estate, crypto, stock option planning, construction, it's really difficult to isolate the transformation, because the transformation that a person running commercial real estate or a bunch of quadplexes is going to be really different than the transformation that a person who just is facing an IPO event gets when they receive guidance about when to exercise their options. So when a CPA is unniched, it's really difficult to find the pattern in the transformation for clients. But when they focus on their niche or on their industry, suddenly the pattern of transformation emerges. And that's when we can say, okay, we're going to hone in on this transformation and recreating this transformation across clients like this.
Yeah, pause right there. Okay, so the pattern and the boredom and repetitive and all this, all kind of the same thing. It's like without repetition, you won't see the patterns. You can't get smarter. You know what I mean? You like getting, you know, working smarter, not harder, comes from identifying these patterns and then being able to just like hit that free throw. It's like, oh, here are the patterns, you know? So I can imagine someone looking like, oh, but then it'll just be repetitive. And it's like, well, the thing, it's like separate the repetition of rerunning this pattern. So like you see this cycle that happens and then you just rerun the cycle. It's like, but if rerunning that cycle produces a stellar outcome because you've focused on a group of clients for whom this cycle repeats, then you can produce outsized outcomes, like positive outcomes for them. And if you have so many clients that was great, all of those things that you just threw out there, it was just like dizzying number of, you know, the IPO and all these is just crazy. There's probably a level at which learning all of those different things was fun at the beginning of your career when you're like, ooh, this is like, oh, this is something new. And like, wow, an IPO, imagine that. And maybe there was something kind of cool about it at the beginning. But if you aren't detecting any patterns, you don't see anything repeating, then just think of the surface area that you become responsible for, at which you're basically intermediate at best, or maybe an amateur. So you can't be doing as good of a job creating as much value for that broad a spectrum of clients, because it's just impossible to keep up with all that. I'm assuming here you don't have an 80 person firm. So like we're talking about solos and small firms. Like you could have departments that handle different things, but I don't think that's the audience we're talking to.
So in the case of my listeners, there's 55,000 pages of tax code and new legislation coming out all the time. And what my clients will say is, as they niche, it helps them streamline what they need to pay attention to and focus on, and what they know they can tune out, which is a huge time saving.
Yeah, the leverage, because you get the leverage across all of your clients. If the same thing is going to apply, a new regulation is going to apply or not apply to most or all of your clients, that's an important piece of leverage, especially when it's happening all the time. So you can go, you can say to everybody, hey, this new thing happened and you don't need to worry about it. You might have heard about this. You don't need to worry about it. And it's spread across all of your clients. So you're becoming like, trying not to say superhuman, but it's like that. It's like that.
Yeah, because you don't have to think of each of your individual clients and keep up on each of their individual situations in quite the same way. So I'm curious to hear on your side, for my listeners, right? Because when you listen to a different industry, you can see it sometimes more clearly because you're not, you know, you don't have your own bias sort of clouding. So for your niche and the folks that you work with, what are the niches, or what is the tightened positioning that they head into, and how does that yield leveraged gains for them?
Yes, I will go into that. Before I'll do that, though, I'll tell your audience the pains that, let's just focus on software developers because that's my background. The pains that they would be highly aware of are different than what CPAs would be aware of, from the sound of it. So my people are not, they are not the beneficiary of their clients having to file taxes every year or do anything every year. So for software developers, pipeline is the main problem, attracting leads, finding prospective new clients. And then once they do get this tiny trickle of leads occasionally coming over the transom, because of that trickle being so tiny, they have a real hard time. The pricing pressure is down. So they're very commoditized because the demand is so low compared to the supply. So for my people, that's the main thing. Like if they're going through feast famine cycle, it's nauseating. It is terrible. You do get some people who have enough of a reputation and they have enough word of mouth that they're busy all the time. And those folks end up stuck at an income level at around $200,000. And as their hair gets grayer, they start to freak out because they're like, this is never going to end. This is how much I make forever. So the issue with my people is they're commoditized and they just don't stand out from the crowd. There's nothing meaningfully different about them to anyone in particular.
This is so interesting because my people have the same problem.
Yeah, CPAs are spoiled.
Well, they are and they aren't. My people have the same problem, but they don't know it. Or they don't think of it as a problem. What they think is, I have too much business. I don't want to market because I already have clients coming out of my ears. But what's happening is that because of the absence of specificity and being able to focus on the pains of the client, the dreams of the client, the process that fixes from A to B, it makes it really difficult to generate quality leads. So they have a business by referral of a smattering of clients across the board, which has this same commoditization and downward price pressure. So they don't have the feast famine revenue cycle, but they do have the question, how do I generate quality leads? So I'm curious, for your people, how does niching for them help them connect the dots to, this will help you generate more quality leads?
And this ties in the whole business model. So it depends on the business model. So software developers go in, I think, a larger variety of directions. Well, this might just be me not knowing that much about accounting, but software developers go in lots of different directions. So like they might build a SaaS and get out of client work completely. They might go into training and train junior versions of themselves to be better at their tasks. But if we stick with just the client work, because I think that's where the overlap is, with the client work, if you're doing essentially, I guess the analogy or the comparison would either be retainer-based services or project work, they can finally attract larger clients. Like niching down immediately allows you to see a path to bigger, better clients, which is the path to scaling up. Assuming you're not going to scale up by hiring, and, you know, like marking up people's hours and then just doing the arbitrage thing, assuming that you're not going to hire your way to growth, the way to increase your profits is to niche down on a particular market. And then as soon as you do that, you find out that you were looking at, you know, a little teeny image of London on a globe, and all of a sudden you zoom in and you find out that the language that you've been using on, say, on your website, because that's probably the only marketing anyone's doing in the software space, they maybe have a website, or if they're doing even worse, they have like an Upwork profile or something. When they pick a niche, all of a sudden they can start learning the lingo. They can start showing up in watering holes where these ideal buyers congregate. They can start to say things that connect with the buyers. So instead of talking about their jargon, like, oh, I can build you a Node.js API for a headless CMS, and, you know, talking about all this gobbledygook.
Can I have four of those, please?
Right. Yeah. Right. That's the reaction.
How do you even buy? Yes. What is that?
But to the seller, the software developer, it's like, look at all of the things I learned how to do. I'm so good at all of these things, Nuxt and Next and React and Gatsby and this laundry list of things that they were excited to learn on some client's dime because they just love learning new stuff like that. But that eventually that gets boring. Because you start to see an anti-pattern. You start to see the anti-pattern, which is like, huh, there's a new JavaScript framework coming out every week. And the new one's really not meaningfully different from the old one, but I feel like I need to keep my website, which is really a resume, up to date. I don't want to feel like I'm falling behind. So now they feel like they're on this treadmill of having to learn new technology all the time. And it gets old. You're just like, wow, that gets old. And then so that's another one of the pains. And then it's like, okay, here I come. Stark comes along and says, you know, if you niche down, that is the antidote to these things. It's not instant, but it is a reliable path. So you can start, so they can stop talking about the, you know, acronym soup, and they can start talking about something specific that farmers with 7,500 acre farms care about. You know, like some sort of, fluid dynamics tracking application or something that they care about. So you can start, if you pick who you want to talk to, you can use their words. And you cannot speak their language until you know who you're talking to. Like in the way that I kind of emphasize this or sort of take it to its ridiculous extreme, if you don't know if your audience speaks English or Japanese, how do you know what language to use? You need to know which language to use. So once you know what language to use, then you can start using that language. It's going to be a lot more effective than telling jokes in Japanese to an English-speaking audience. They're not going to laugh, right? So if you extrapolate, or if you broaden the definition of language here to include word choice, not just language, but if you broaden that to include word choice, it changes everything. You can't know what words to choose until you know who you're talking to, which means you have to pick. So that, you know, you have to pick who you want to talk to. And then once you do that, then you know just what to say. And if you don't, you know who to have a conversation with to learn what words they use in these situations.
Okay. So for the person who's listening and still not fully able to connect all the dots here, for example, for my people, they talk about P&Ls that are 5 miles long, right? Whereas a software coder is like, wait, what? So how does knowing, if I say, you know, you have P&Ls that are 5 miles long and clients show up with a shoebox full of receipts and their books are a dumpster fire and you've got to clean it all up before you can handle their return, and you've got all your little old ladies that need taken care of and all the rest. So how do you take that sort of specific language of their industry? How does that tie back to higher quality leads and attracting larger clients and the path to bigger, better clients?
In software?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you a really concrete example. So I've got a guy that's doing really well in the Salesforce space right now. So maybe people on both of our audiences know what Salesforce is. He's niched down in not just Salesforce, which is a pretty big ecosystem, but a very specific aspect of Salesforce It's so arcane that I'm having trouble remembering. It's something like, I think there's some crossover. It's like calculating taxes in a particular locale. It's just onerous. And other software developers who are sort of floating around from shiny object to shiny object and learning the new JavaScript framework every week would look at that and say like, oh, I'd be bored just doing that. What they don't understand is that my guy doesn't care about that anymore. He doesn't care about the sugar high of the new framework. He's more interested in producing value for his clients. And there's a lot of stuff to learn there. So it's not like you stop learning. You just jump onto a different learning curve. In a concrete sense, what it means is he knows exactly what words to use to talk about this stuff. He knows exactly where to go, in real life, in meet space, and also online, to put his value proposition in front of people who will immediately recognize it. So it's so much easier to generate awareness around the right people, like the people that you can reliably hit a double for, and sometimes a home run, and sometimes a grand slam. It's so much easier to find those people because they group together already. They're already birds of a feather. And once you get into that group, the word spreads like wildfire because you are designed for them. Your product or your service or your firm is designed specifically for them. You are a bespoke service provider for this group of people. And there's still going to be a lot of variation, enough variation to be interesting inside of this niche. In fact, what you see a lot of times is people will niche down on something and then when they really start to feel what you and I are talking about, they go even deeper. Because they're like, oh, I thought this category was one thing, but it's actually five different things. So I like one of them a lot more than the other ones. So I'm going to go into that and I'm going to just sort of put blinders on to opportunities in these other areas because they suddenly seem like huge distractions.
Okay, perfect. So for the person who's like, wait a minute, how does being able to speak the lingo connect up with getting bigger, better clients? It's the ability to clearly understand and articulate the value proposition and then stick yourself right in the pond that is densely stocked with trout. And you're like, they're everywhere. And I put this in front of them and there are plenty of people who immediately recognize the value and say, oh my gosh, we need exactly you.
Yeah, they line up. It's like outside of an Apple store from the new iPhone. And what effect do you think that line would have on the psychology of the people standing in it?
What's inside there?
Yeah, the demand goes way up. And therefore, you can be, this I think applies more to software developers, but I know to CPAs as well. You can't work with everyone. So if you have this line of people, you can be choosy about picking the ones that you're most confident you can hit a home run or a grand slam for. So it's not about being exclusive to just have this status thing like behind the velvet rope backstage pass. It's not about that. It's like, everybody's got limited time and resources. So why wouldn't I want to work with the people for whom I can deliver just outsized massive home runs? And it's never guaranteed, but you can increase your odds by attracting the kinds of people that you want to work with, and then knowing, being able to recognize what things are yellow flags, what are red flags that just aren't a good fit for you, and really focus in on the one. Just keep spiraling in. It can stop at a certain point. You can over niche. I've seen it happen, but it's extraordinarily rare. It's almost not worth talking about. And the solution is super obvious. So it's not worth talking about, but it virtually never happens. And what the opposite happens is that you spiral in more and more. And as you do that, if you're creating more value, you can increase your fees without working anymore.
Okay. So you've touched on a few things in there that fall under, in my notes, the category of reward. And one of those is the confidence that comes from when you're niched and you know the value proposition and you have clients who are lined up outside to work with you and you legitimately have a wait list for working with you. It creates a sense of deep stability that is, I think, far less available in the feast famine cycle of where's my next lead going to come from.
Yeah, it feels like calm.
And a sense of, you know, heaven forbid something happened and you lost everything. Once you know how to build your business this way, it makes it so that you can just rebuild if you needed to. And knowing that you know how to rebuild if, heaven forbid, something terrible happened, I think also creates another layer of that deep sense of calm that everything is fine.
That point that you just made sort of zooms us out to a bigger picture that might be worth mentioning, which is that when you are a technician, and especially speaking to my people, but your people are technical too in a different way. When you're a technician, odds are pretty good that you either learned that in school or you learned it at a job or a combination, and then at some point decided to go solo. I don't know that many people that immediately became an entrepreneur like right out of the gate. Most people had a job and then they acquire this skill, and then for some reason they become dissatisfied with the job, could be any reason. And they make the leap to working for themselves. And initially, they just do the activities of their craft. They want to get better and better at the technical aspects of their job. They find a sense of mastery there that it feels they're still on the low side of the S curve. What they don't realize is that just like, let's say, developing a Shopify store or whatever, it doesn't matter, you know, building a website, there's a craft to that. And there are things that your peers will sort of like say, oh, can you believe she did that? Or, oh, I can't believe, oh, that was amazing. You know, so you can sort of, you have this, it's mostly imagined, but this sense that your peers would be impressed or unimpressed with particular aspects of your coding, your website development skills. And I think everybody's got that experience of getting better at your craft. It could be knitting. It doesn't matter. So you're like, oh, okay. But the thing that they don't realize almost across the board is when a technician leaves their whatever their last job was and they go solo and they hang out their own shingle, is that they became a business owner. And there's also a craft to that. And they're totally blind to it. They just think, if I just keep getting better at doing the activities of my craft, my business will be better. And that's ridiculous. I mean, I shouldn't say it like that. I mean, it's so common that I can't use the word ridiculous, but it would be like saying, if you imagine that your craft is tax or you're, you know, filing taxes or whatever, or bookkeeping, and you imagine that your craft is building web apps with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, it would be ridiculous to either one of those people to imagine that some total noob could just come in and get lucky and just be good at this thing that you've spent years learning. But that's how entrepreneurs are looking at you when you think, like, you're like, people who get it, which is that state that you were describing that kind of kicked off this tangent, the state you're describing, if you, heaven forbid, lost everything, the thing that you've learned is how to business. And this is just niching down on a particular, like, knowing your target market is like a core basic principle of businessing. So you kind of embarked on this new S-curve of learning how to business without knowing it. A lot of people are just, they just stay in this cycle at the bottom of that S-curve, and that's it.
This might be a little risque for my or your audience, but in the accounting space, they say accounting is the language of business.
Okay.
And I don't quite know what they mean when they say that. But I think a lot of people, and I think accountants, tend to think that because they speak accounting, that they should just be good at business. But I think of it like, you know, French may be the language of love.
Oh.
But being able to speak French is not what makes a person a good lover. Like, that is a different skill set, my friend.
Yeah.
I think that business owners who come in, or sorry, technicians who come in and hang their shingle, falsely think, and no fault of their own, right? We're all on this journey of business ownership, trying to figure it out and figuring it out as we go. It's just like a normal part of the process. But think that being a technician and an excellent technician is sufficient, and don't recognize that the moment they hang their shingle, now they need to get a new skill set, which is business ownership.
Yeah, it's like saying a high school grammar teacher can write a novel.
entirely different skill set.
Right.
So I have a few more things on my list that I want to make sure that we get to. You know, there are a bunch under this in this bucket that I call reward, right? For my clients who niche, immediately their revenue starts going up, 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 and their hours go down. And I've experienced the same being niched myself. I make easily three times, if not four times, what I made 5 years ago when I was more of a generalist. And my hours have gone way down, right? So just to put some actual numbers on this thing, on this, because I think, you know, it's easy to sort of talk in generalisms in the cloud, but like, no, 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 it's real. The revenue is so much easier to generate. The freedom is off the hook. And I think that gets under discussed, possibly for a couple of reasons. One of them being that not a lot of people, the majority of people, I think, don't really go all the way in the niche, in their niche, and don't get to the place where they have this sort of intense level of freedom to run their business and have their life all fit together and work harmoniously. And that there's just a ton of, I mean, my clients will say to me things like, I'm going to my cabin for a long weekend for the first time in tax season ever. Or I'm taking a 4-day weekend in tax season. Don't tell anyone. Or, you know, I'm going on vacation in tax season, right? They start to take vacation in tax season, which is unheard of.
Yeah.
So there becomes so much more room and space in their life for the other parts of their life.
But Geraldine, doesn't that sound boring to you? It's not boring.
It's wonderful.
It's amazing. It's the opposite of boring. I think the whole shift is kind of encapsulated in that sort of like last piece we were talking about there. Like even the earlier stuff we were saying in this episode about, no, what you do is not your activities. What you do is transform your clients. And the better you can do that, and the more patterns that you see, that increases the odds of you. It's all business. It's all marketing, sales, delivery, operations. It's business. You run a business. You probably have a really good reason that you started that business. At least at first, maybe it was just like, I got fired or I hated that job and I left. But pretty soon you decided to stick with it. So if you kept running it after the first year, there's something about it that you like. Learning that craft produces the kind of results that you just listed. Like if you're, this is how, you know, there's so much hustle culture about this. Like, oh, you know, I made my first 10 million by the time I was 23. Like, never mind that garbage. But just like whatever your definition of freedom is, and it's usually time independence, like some kind of autonomy where you can decide who you want to work with, when and how, and not feel trapped by reactions to outside stimuli like bills and cranky clients, and just be able to like do your thing and then take a 4-day weekend during tax season. That is the reason. Even if you don't realize it, that's, or I shouldn't say that's the reason, but that is the benefit of being your own boss. So if you're not getting that benefit, and we're saying like the doorway is right there, like picking, if you just pick who you want to work with, it's a reliable path. Nothing's guaranteed, but it is a reliable path that a lot of people have gone down and it worked. So it's like, if that is what you want, if you do want that kind of freedom, here's the door.
I think that something that doesn't get brought into this often enough into the niching conversation is the need for courage, and that seeking excellence and seeking mastery takes courage, because you're going to screw up, you're going to mess up, fall on your face, and you're going to have to get back up again and do it all over. And it takes courage to say, I want to be that good, and recognize the tension between wherever that good is right now and where you are. Because immediately you will recognize the distance between the two and you'll go, oh crap, I need to get a lot better.
No, you're right. It's like you're at the top of your old game,
right?
The technician game. And all of a sudden you listen to us and it's like, oh, I actually stink at this other game that I didn't even know I was playing.
Yes.
So when I say stink, right. But you know, it's like, you're like, there's so much to learn. It's like, oh, I've been sitting at the bottom of this learning curve for 3 years, not even knowing it. And so then looking up at the top of this learning curve, it's, it might not be, it's you have to step outside your comfort zone because you're comfortable. If you're in this situation, you're probably really comfortable with, you probably have this sense of mastery around your craft, or whatever your technical application is, or your technical skills are. You probably have that sense of mastery there. It's comforting, but it's not safe. So like it's in your comfort zone, but it's not in your safety zone. But you don't know that. Maybe it will click listening to this conversation, but all of a sudden you're like, OMG, I'm in a bad place. Because the comfortable place is not the safe place. So all of a sudden it's like, ooh, you can look at it either way. It's like, oh, I'm at risk here. Like if heaven forbid I lost everything, I wouldn't know what to do. But if you climb up this new learning curve, the business learning curve that you didn't realize that you jumped onto, then it produces these results.
It's sort of like when you go from being a senior in high school to a freshman in college.
Right. Yeah. You go to a big regional school and you're like, whoa.
Right. You're a senior in high school. You're like, cool. I know it. Like I'm at the top of my game. I'm at the top of all these classes. I know so much more than the freshman. You're like, kind of think of yourself like, it feels like a good spot to be a senior. And then you start over as a freshman. You recognize that you're like, oh, now I have another 4-year learning curve in front of me. And that's okay. Like it's totally normal to feel that sense of look at the mountain I have to climb. But I think our listeners are people who are intellectually curious and enjoy learning. So it's okay. You just take that desire to learn more and deepen your expertise and now point it at this new challenge, which is business ownership.
So if we tie that back to the main focus here, it's not boring. Like you're on a new learning curve.
It is fascinating.
In fact, it's so not boring that you're probably scared of it.
Yeah.
Right?
But I mean, I want to give listeners from my own personal experience, right? Because I'm super niche. I work with single owner, 6-figure CPAs who are overworked and want to stop overworking.
Yeah, that's so specific.
It's like hyper niche. And there's a ton of variety in my client base. And I find it fascinating because I continue to find problems that they have that I'm like, ooh, how could I solve that? And then once I figure out how to solve it, I'm like, how could I solve that faster for them with less heartache for them? It's like there's no end in sight to the interesting problems that remain to be solved. And I get to find the ones that I think are most valuable to them and most interesting to me, find the overlap, and then set about solving them. There's nothing boring. It is the opposite of boring. It is fascinating. And it's endless. And I think that, you know, back to the London thing, it's like it just looks like a dot on the globe. But when you get there, it is so much more deep and rich than you could possibly imagine.
One thing you touched on there that I'll point out, again, to focus on the boredom thing. Once you drill in to the target market and you've figured out how to deliver value in your initial sort of angle of attack, like your angle of entry, maybe in your case, it's like to get people down, get them working less. Like they're overworked. They don't want to be working that much. And that's your initial value proposition. Once you're in there and you've solved that problem and you're getting good at, you've created systems that reliably will solve that problem. And it's like, okay, it's not that I couldn't optimize that, but it's kind of solved. And you can go upstream and downstream of that problem for those people, because when that happens and you have solved it for a client, they're going to have new problems. And if you want to, I'm not saying you have to, but sometimes their new problems are really interesting and challenging for you. Maybe for me, a classic example was like when I was doing software development and then I made the leap into teaching software developers how to business. You know, like here's how I built this successful business, and maybe you could too, without hiring, because there's not a lot of material about how to do that. So it was like same audience. I used to teach them how to make responsive websites, let's say, or iPhone apps. And then it's like, well, and I've got this audience of people. What's the problem they all have? Not learning new frameworks. Problem they all have is getting leads, especially good leads. And I had solved that. So now, boom. And then I could imagine at some point being like, okay, now I've got all of these successful software developers who have 7-figure solo businesses. What problem do they have now? I don't know. Managing their money, their mental health. It could be a whole bunch of other things that I have no expertise in. Maybe it would be fun to learn. But instead of learning new frameworks every week, I'd be learning like a completely different category of thing. So what I'm just saying there is like the boredom thing is just such a myth. It's such a red herring.
It's a mirage. I get that it looks real. It looks real, but that doesn't mean it's real.
That's a perfect description. As soon as you get up to it, it's not there.
But it sure looks real from far away and you want to believe it's true.
Yep.
But it's dangerous to set your course based on a mirage.
Mm-hmm.
I have one more piece on my list, and that is a sense of purpose. And I'm curious to know if your people who have niched say anything about giving them a sense of purpose or a sense of being mission-driven or anything like that.
Some of them do. Like my gut reaction to that, it's not something I really track. My gut reaction is about 50-50, where some people really are, they use all the language of like, you know, transformation and mission. And it's, there are some people that are motivated by that. Other ones are maybe getting that fulfillment elsewhere, or it's just not that attractive to them. And they're more excited about engineering this machine that is their business. And they get a lot of excitement out of that. So it could just be that that half of the group, if it's half, it could be that that half of the group is will get there once they stop playing with the machine and they've figured it out and it's running. And they're like, oh, okay, here's how I can, oh, this works to get leads. And these are systems and everything. And they get all of the systems because all my people pretty much are systems thinkers and they really love making systems. So that kind of makes sense to me that it would be like that. And other ones get the mission thing right away. I wonder what'll happen over time for the people who sort of create these sort of more like engine-based businesses. Like if someone that runs a laundromat's not on a mission, you know, they're like, oh, it's like a great, fun way. It's a decent way for me to provide for my family, whatever it is. Like it's very self-oriented. I have a fair number of people like that. Probably not the answer you were looking for. But perhaps at some point they'll be like, isn't it, you know, is there more? Like, is this it? Maybe they're happy. Maybe they're not happy. I don't know.
I wonder if I think anything in addition to what you just said.
I'm on a mission for everyone to have clean clothes. Like you could imagine it.
Yeah.
I think it's super helpful. It makes your life a lot easier. At least for me, it makes your life a lot easier. It makes it easier to run your business if you know how you're trying to change the world and you're not just focused on like, how do I make my business run more smoothly?
I think you can point your purpose at your business running more smoothly.
That's fair. Yeah, that makes sense.
I think for my people too, what I see is even if they're not on a mission necessarily, and I think my folks at my audience are generally not necessarily on a mission, they do get the gratification that comes with knowing that they're making a meaningful difference in the lives of their clients. And then that becomes something that they want to put on repeat. How can I make more of an impact in the lives of my existing clients, and how can I have more clients like this for whom I can make this similar kind of impact because I get just how much of a difference that it makes in their lives.
Yeah, I think that is addictive for a lot of people. And even if it's not addictive, it's great for business. So you could get addicted to the growth that comes from that. But I am driven by that for sure.
So do you think we've left any stones unturned? Do you think there are listeners who are still convinced that, nah, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be bored.
I don't know how, if you're not convinced to take the leap. Well, so there's two other, we're going to start a whole new show here. Boredom is not the only objection to niching.
Yes.
There's also, I won't get enough clients. There's a fear and I'll pick the wrong thing and be trapped. I'll continue to be trapped in my business. So there's multiple fears around it. So it is possible that we didn't convince someone to try it, but I would almost, if nothing else, I would want people to at least recognize that there is a craft to building a business that achieves the goals that you want for yourself and your clients, and at least becoming somewhat curious about what the moving parts of that are. Niching down is just one. It's a big, super helpful one, and you won't be bored if you do it, I can promise. But there's a lot of other things that you could kind of explore if you were still white knuckled onto the ledge of generalism.
So what's the one thing that we're going to leave listeners with if they're like, okay, I'm convinced, I'm sold. What do I do now?
I start having conversations with that group. So if you know what the group is, or you've got a few candidates, I would start having conversations with them more exploratory on their terms. Or maybe, I mean, you don't even have to have a conversation. You could hang out with them and just listen for any kind of emotionally charged language. And then you can engage in conversation around some of the hopes, dreams, worries, and fears that they're expressing. If you feel like you want to learn more, or there's a possibility that there's something you could do for them in the at some future point, and start collecting their language. You know, how do they talk about these things? What keeps them up nights? I would just start there. And then if you find that it's surprising, you might find it's surprisingly easy. Sometimes it's not so much, but it can be very easy.
I think that's a perfect place to leave it. If you're wondering what to do next because you're sold on the idea, find the people that you like being around and start listening for their hopes, dreams, worries, and fears.
I said it, so I'll agree with it.
Jonathan, this has been so great. If people want to find out more about you or your podcast, where do they do that?
Google Jonathan Stark.
Not the actor. Find the other one.
I finally got him beat in the SEO. So.
Oh, nice work. Yes. Well, it has been lovely to be with you. And listeners, I will see you next time. Hi again. Would you rather spend your weekends outside playing or at your desk? In Down to 40 Hours CPA Mastermind, we put an end to overworking while maintaining revenue. Go to GeraldineCarter.com to learn more. Dates, times, pricing, it's all there.